Hello and welcome to the Entrepreneur Show with Asa Laveau. I am your clearly divine host, Asa Laveau. So glad that you are here because today is all about love. As Billy Porter says, the category is love. So if you have no idea what the Entrepreneur Show is all about, you have no idea what an entrepreneur is. Well, it is a term that I created to bring focus on the intersection of all things divinely queer and business. I do that because I feel like it's important to have one space where things that matter to you are discussed. So if I want to talk about, you know, the Kiki culture, or I want to talk about death drops, or I want to talk about the last episode of Pose or the impact that Paris is Burning had on me or on you. But I also want to talk about having a sales conversation or even something more personal, how loving yourself or finding love has an impact on your business. Guess what? I get to do all of those things right here, right now with you as we co-create this experience. Again, I hope you're having a tremendously glorious, blissful day today. And if you're not, I'm going to ask you to feel a new feeling. That may seem a little bit, crass. Like, Asa, you're not even taking into account my feeling. Yes, I am. That's why I want you to feel a new feeling. Just make the choice. You made the choice to feel the crap you're feeling now. So make the choice to feel a new feeling. And today, I desire for you to feel love. Love for you, love for others, and for those of you who are single, open the possibility of what it could look like if love found you and you found it. And it looked good. So let's just be honest. Sometimes love be trying to knock on your door, aka the inbox, and it'd be nasty, y'all. It'd be looking horrible, snaggly tooth, and just real, it's a situation. So I don't desire for you to have to go through that situation at all. I want you to find the love that you desire. And in order for you to get clear on really the steps to do better, how is that even possible? You might be so focused on the business now, or you might be so focused on just spending time with you, getting you ready for the love that is to come, that you aren't really sure anymore about the steps to take. Well, sometimes I'm a little unsure about what steps to take, and that's why I'm bringing on someone to talk to you. That person is by the name of Jimmy Allen of Jimmy Allen Coaching. He is here today to assist you in whatever it is or what the steps are to finding the one. So without further ado, Jimmy, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for that introduction.
Most welcome. So just so we know a little bit about you, please tell us what toy did you grow up with in order for us to learn a little bit about you? Like, tell us what toy, and also tell us what playing with this particular toy says about you as well.
What particular toy that I played with as a kid, and what does it say about me? I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is He-Man. I used to have literally probably the entire collection. It was something that I used to watch also every morning before school. And I loved the idea of, you know, being that each and every one of us has this ability to transform into sort of this like hero-esque or this super like have the superpower, the super persona of ourselves in order to do good for others. So I think that represents me in learning to myself and doing work on myself, the learning to tap into that inner, I guess, hero or goodness in myself to transform into someone that does good for others.
So first off, so He-Man is telling your age, sir. But I being, you know, I'm closer to 40 than I am to 30. And so I definitely remember He-Man and She-Ra and Skeletor. So all of those are very real to me. And I must say, now that you bring it up, I never really thought about the transformational idea behind He-Man, because at the root of it, it is a transformational story. I mean, with every opening credit, this person transforms. Yeah. So I kind of like that. And I think that was very much the, if you were an 80s baby and you grew up with cartoons, I believe that that was pretty much, now that I'm thinking about it, transformation with Transformers,
right,
with He-Man, there's always some character turning into something else to be of service to others.
Right. And if you also think about, and I'm like, as I'm like, we were talking about this, you listen to what he says, I have the power. Mm-hmm. Like he's like his affirming, like speaking to existence of, I have the power to do or be whatever I want, I choose to be. And most of all of those like Transformers all have that sort of like speaking the word out to order to transform into what you want to create to do good.
That's a great segue. That's a very good segue. And I like that. And so for those of you who are listening, please understand that my suggestion to others is, first off, understand when it comes to love, understand that you really do have the power. And you don't have to just sit and just wait and be idle. It's like, well, nobody's coming to me. You are not a tree, person. Get up and move. You are not a tree.
Right.
So, Jimmy, please let us know, in your own words, what is it that, like, what's your brand promise? What do you do for your clients that come to you?
Well, my brand promise is basically to help others look within inside, to really find out the things, the assumptions, the choices, and look at how their thoughts are really creating their world and their love life, and that has been stopping them. And then we sort of tackle those thoughts and assumptions and stories around those particular things. And then we start to change those things, like basically I have the power, and start creating new thoughts, new ideas, new choices, and align yourself with those particular things that you want to create. Like you have the power to create the love life you want. And that starts with you, like what you're doing and how you've been operating. And then most of the time we go back to every single past relationship or even dating relationships. And we just start to look at the clues of what might be the pattern, the source, and the choices that led up to those quote unquote bad relationships. I don't think there's like really a bad relationship. They're just lessons in life that teach us how to be better and a better lover, a better person, better human being. And but sometimes we get so wrapped up into the woe is me, I'm a victim kind of like talk, and we don't look at relationships, our past relationships, as clues as to what I need to work on with myself. So I help, you know, my clients to really look at, and not like we're not reliving moments, but we're looking at the clues of what that relationship has been telling you or showing you that you, or what you could work on with yourself.
So when you have people that are coming to you, what have you been able to assess is like the, is there a common core belief when people first come to you about their ideas around love and being in a relationship?
There is some common core beliefs. Like, I mean, you know, when I studied, for those who don't know, like I studied with the woman who created the book Calling in the One. And so she created this sort of list of core beliefs. And she's like, there's only really like four of them, and most of the time is I'm invisible, I don't matter. And the biggest one is like, I'm not good enough. And so those core beliefs really run people's lives. And so what I do is we like really look, okay, where did that first start? Where did that belief come from? And how are you perpetually living out this belief? Because a lot of the times we don't realize that we look for evidence to validate that belief. And you say, see, look, there's no good man. I'm invisible. Nobody sees me. And then we, in our actions, are aligned with, like, I'm invisible. Like, I don't go out. I don't share myself. I don't tell people what I'm up to. You know, when I go to, you know, like, you know, a singles mixer, I don't really talk to anyone. I don't reveal anything, you know. And then we leave the event like, oh, like, nobody was interested in me. But yet you were in the corner being invisible and unwilling to be seen. Even, like, the way they're dressed, like, I was coaching a girl one day and I said, you know, and she showed me her profile and I said, you know, you're invisible in this profile. She's like, what? And I said, well, you know, she was about like maybe 120 pounds. Even in person, she always wore this black and baggy clothes. And I pointed it out because in every picture she was either wearing baggy clothes or she was standing behind someone. And she was like, oh my God, like, I do. She's like, well, I don't want people to look at my body, because she had a really great body. She goes, I want people to look at my brain. I want people to notice my brain, how smart I am. I said, well, you know, people are very visually stimulated first. Then they have a reason to come up to you. They're like, oh, look at you from across the room. Say, oh, she has a great brain. You know, we're physically attracted to people. And that's what, initially make us go over to someone to talk to someone to find out if this person has a brain.
Okay, so out of those common core beliefs, the one that stuck out to me the most is this idea around being invisible. And, and it stuck out to me because I've never heard it articulated. I've never heard it articulated that way. Like, I'm invisible. So when people come to you and they feel invisible, they feel like, of course, they're not being seen, but is it because that's the choice they made, or are they feel like they are just continually being turned down or overlooked?
Well, I can give you an example. So I had a client. It's various things, and most of the time it comes from something that happens in childhood. Like, for instance, I had a client, she's Indian, and I say Indian because she grew up in a family and she is dark skinned. She's the darkest skin in her immediate family, and her sisters and her mother and her cousins are all light skinned. And so in India, you know, they have this term where if you're dark skinned, you're considered like black or like quote unquote nigga kind of like characteristics. And she didn't say this, but I learned this from another Indian guy. He kind of taught me this. And she was the only one also with curly hair, with all her sisters and aunts and had straight hair. And so they got more attention than she did growing up. So she felt like she was invisible because they always gave the sisters always all the attention. They catered to their needs first. She was always last. And they always made fun of her because of her hair, because of her skin. And she grew up like that. And like, it happened to her in high school, middle school, growing up here. She was like happy to come to America. And when she got out of the house, like, you know, she thought she was free, but she was perpetuating that whole situation. And so as we were looking in her dating life, she was currently in a relationship when she came to me. And when I pointed it out, she kind of got like a little thrown. And she was like, well, how did you figure that out? I said, well, you're in a relationship with a guy. He's very abrasive with you. Everything he says, he goes. You drop everything for him. You know, every time he tells your needs, he dismisses you, and you just drop everything and you just do whatever he wants you to do. And I said, also based on your relationship with your mother, your father, your sister, all these things, that was the evidence that said that you are invisible. Your needs don't matter. Then your needs don't matter. His needs matter more than you. And she kind of she got quiet a little bit on the phone. And so as we started working together, we had to start to identify the things that she wanted to create. So that's like how one person can just basically make themselves visible. And it was in every single relationship. Like, she never stated her needs. She never said what she wants because she was afraid, that she would be rejected. And also, in the same relationship that she was in, he made fun of her the same exact way the parents made fun of her, the same exact way the kids in high school made fun of her, the same exact. So it was a pattern that I saw, and I just had to point it out and help her, say, oh, okay, now I see how I perpetuate this idea that I'm invisible. And even the way she dressed, she never wore colored clothes. She always wore muted, I don't want to say baggy clothes, because this girl was sort of like also kind of a friend, but she always wore clothes that didn't highlight her best features. She was a beautiful girl, but she wore these clothes that hid her.
So I hear the clothes part. The one part I didn't, the one part that really, I guess, stuck out with me is that she had been overlooked her entire life.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really joyful to hear, of course.
No.
Of course, people do grow up like that, and because I didn't, and when I hear it, there's this internal contrast that is so very real to me. And I want to feel for them. I'm like, oh my God, to grow up like that, just not being seen over and over and
over again
and over. So if there is someone, because that really stuck to me, if someone is going through that now, or while they're listening to our conversation, they're going back into the years and they're like, oh, wow, that's me. What is just one thing, one exercise that someone could do to make that less of a reality or eradicate it altogether as far as that feeling of being invisible?
Right. So, does it really eradicate? I don't know. I think you can lessen it, because you have to think, by the time someone comes to me, they're an adult. And so, and then she was like in her 30s. So that's 30 years of living that way. And so it's like embedded in your body, in your subconscious mind. And it's, the first part is having awareness. And the second part is to have the willingness to own up to it, because most people, when I say things like that or point it out, most people react, because she reacted really abruptly. And, and so it's okay, let's look at the evidence. You say, okay, wow, I see how that perpetually is running my life. Okay, so all right, so you see the pattern. It's that's the second phase, really seeing, being aware of your actions. What are you doing? The words you're speaking to existence, your actions and how you behave with other people. Really, I help the client really become aware of all the words, the verbiage, and the physical things and the sort of scenario they set themselves up in order to keep that alive. So you just have to really look of have the willingness to look I do that, and accept that that's what you do. So, okay, then it gives you power, because the awareness gives you power to make a new choice. So, okay, so then the second step is, well, what is the third step? Sorry. It's like, okay, well, what do I really want to create? What is it that I need to work on? What skill? And knowing with somebody who's invisible, one of the number one skills is that they need to learn how to define their needs. Because majority of people who feel that they're invisible, they don't really speak up. They don't really articulate their needs. And most of the time, they don't really know what their needs is because they've been rejected so much. Like, it just, like, why articulate? It doesn't matter anyway. Nobody sees me. You know, so they have that core belief about themselves. So then what I do is I really help them really define what their needs is. And so I have them sort of like write it out. It's like, well, like I say, for instance, you know, a new belief would be, I need to be seen. And then, no, so I want to be seen. And then we kind of flip it. So, okay, well, I want to be seen. And then, okay, if that's your new belief that you want to be seen, then I say, okay, well, what actions do you need to do in order to align with that belief? Like, I need to be seen. So one of the things that with her, she was like, well, I don't really get to wear beautiful, colorful dresses. And she's like, you know, I have these dresses in my closet that I rarely wear. I said, okay, well, this weekend, you're going to wear that dress. And she bought it. And she said, it's been sitting in my closet for a year. And so she started to pick dates to go to the park by herself, and or just things that she's been wanting to do just to be seen. And so she started doing those things to feel good about herself and to be noticed. And then she started to like, then people in her life started to like notice her more, and her friends and stuff like that. Wow, like I've never seen you in that dress. So she started to like really feel good about herself. So, okay. So then we started to define like, well, what is it that I need to articulate in my relationship? And one of the things was just basically to speak up, not to always say yes to things that didn't serve her, because at the time she was preparing to run a marathon. And so she had a strict schedule to follow, and her weekends were filled with like long runs. But what her boyfriend at the time knew that she was doing this, and he would just all of a sudden plan this trip. And so she's like, well, I have a marathon in 3 weeks. Like, you can't just plan a trip without talking to me. And before, she used to like just drop everything and just do what she says, do what he says. And so she started to say no. And she started to like being honoring her needs, which is, I need to stick to this schedule. I need to eat this way. I need to do X, Y, and Z in order to be at my best for this marathon. And it was, and another thing about her preparation, he would make fun of her, like when they go out to restaurants, she always ate healthy foods and he didn't. And so he would make fun of her as she finally started to speak up.
He would make fun of her for eating healthy?
Yeah. He wanted her to eat the way he wanted her to eat because he was going out, he was paying for it. And she started to push back. So he was very controlling over her. He didn't listen to her needs. And normally I wouldn't interject in people's relationships because that's not my job as a coach. My job as a coach is to support that person and for they can make that decision on their own. Like I'm trained to like not interfere because it could backfire. Like they can say, well, you told me to do this. I never tell anyone what to do. I just point it out, and then you make a choice of, you make a decision, not on me, that's you. And so, like, you know, one day finally, like after hearing this over and over again, she texted me. She wanted to call me for an emergency, like coaching. She's like, I need to have a conversation with him. I need coaching. And she was like, I want you to be honest with me. What do you think? And I said, I finally said, I think he's very controlling. He doesn't really serve you. This is what you want. I started pointing out all the things that what you want in a relationship. He's not even honoring what you need, even though you already told him based off what we created, what you need, and you're aligning yourself with that. He's making fun of you. Like, you have to make a decision. The decision is you have to accept for who he is and stay with him, or accept him for who he is and leave. And so she made the decision and she left him. And then the next day, he went to work and apparently he told his employees, his co-workers what had happened. And the co-worker basically told him what I told her about him. He was like, the co-worker said, you don't listen. Like, she told you everything she needed and you just didn't listen. So that's good for her. Good for her for leaving you. He was like shocked. And so then he like called her like a couple of days. Look, I realize I don't listen, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I said, girl, no. Like, he's like, even though he's saying all these things he's willing to try, he still hasn't done the work on himself to find out why he's the way he is. And until he's done the work, I'm like, I'm sorry. It's a no. Like, you're doing all this work on yourself to create the life and love that you want. I'm like, he's a no, but it's your choice, not mine. It's like going backwards.
That story, I did not enjoy that human. I did not enjoy the way that he was presenting himself to the world. I really didn't like that. But I'm very glad that your client was able to make a choice and to think about herself and to live a new life with the new knowledge. So I get that. And is that a part, or is that the first step in finding what you call juicy love?
Yeah, it's like really, the first part is identifying the pattern, the core belief that's associated with the pattern, because that's the first step, like really finding a pattern, you know, because that is where you get power. You know, when I first started doing the work and calling the one, I remember there's a section in the book that we talked about patterns and like using this whole work for myself. And I thought, I saw this pattern of, it was around I am not good enough. And I realized that every person that I dated, including my first and second boyfriend at the time and people in between, all had the shame around being gay. And I was like, oh, like it really shook me. And I was like, wow, like it was a total blind spot for me. And I saw, like, even with my first boyfriend, like, he didn't like PDA. And then when we met his family, he was like, we don't touch, we don't do this, and we didn't do that. He gave me all these rules. So, you know, he left him. And then the next guy did it. He had the same thing. He was living with his best friend who was straight, didn't know he was gay. I was like, oh, I don't want to be with that. Left him. And then my second boyfriend was sort of the same thing. He was out, and he went through sort of a traumatic experience when he was from Spain, and when he got to America, his family cut him off. They was like, well, since you want to be this gay person, you know, we're not going to fund you in school anymore, so you have to go out and do your own thing. And he had this resentment towards his family, and I saw all this resentment and shame of, like, family, and I where is that in my own life? Because I had a coach at the time, and she asked me that question. I said, oh, I couldn't articulate who I was to my mother. And I was just like, oh my God, like, this is like running my life. And I had no idea that I'm not good enough to, like, for my mom, that was my story in my head, to fully be my gay authentic self. And so I had to tackle that, because it was a very limiting belief that I couldn't fully express myself. I wasn't good enough, or I thought my mom wouldn't think I would be good enough for to be her son because of who I am. And so, you know, and that's one of the first parts. And like, and so I had to write this letter to my mom, and that's like sort of the second step when you do calling the one, preparing, like having completion around things in your life or with people. And so I had to have sort of a completion conversation, which basically means, like, it's a structured conversation with the person. And I literally did this with all my boyfriends and people I dated, and because I was really determined to clear out any baggage that was holding me back from like fully expressing my love. And in the completion letter is basically it's more powerful when you have the conversation with the person and you basically say, I've been pretending to be this thing for so long when in fact this is who I am. And what you did and said really hurt me. And the impact on my life is that, you know, I told my mom, it's like the impact on me may not being fully self-expressed. Like, you don't really get to know who I am. I don't get to fully self-express my love to you. You don't really get to know, you know, all the joys and pain and love that I have experienced in the past relationships. And, you know, and a part of this letter, what the coach told me to do, she told me to say the things to her that you're never going to be for her. And that's what really got me, because I realized that was what my mother was holding on to, and that I was perpetuating, that I was never going to be this straight man who's going to marry a woman and have kids. That wasn't going to be me. And that I didn't want to be another man that hurt her in her life. And that was a big one for me, because I realized that I didn't know at the time, because after I wrote this letter, my mom sent me an 8-page letter about all these men that hurt her in her life. And I had no idea, because my mom was very sort of very emotionally unavailable. She doesn't reveal anything. She's very like hard and stern. And I realized that was another thing I had to tackle, but we can get to that. But and I had to like really complete this thing first with her. Like, this is who I am. This is who I promise to be. I promise to be this fully loving gay man who still wants to get married, who still wants kids. And that's who I am. And I'm not going to apologize for that anymore. And so once I had that conversation with her, which was very difficult, then I was able to like just be free. And, you know, a part of the other completion conversation with past romantic relationship, which was very scary to like really look at, okay, even though my first boyfriend was sort of verbally abusive to me, like I had every opportunity to stay, but I chose to stay. So why did I choose to stay? Because I used him for some reason, because I paid cheap rent, you know, and I had to like own up to all these things, because I knew deep down he was not the one for me. So I stayed in that relationship and like, you know, took it and just, you know, fought with him. And like, because in my mind, I had no other example, because he was the first one. I just assumed like, well, I had this belief that you just compromise to be in a relationship and you just make it work. And I'm like, oh, that's a really false belief. Like, you can't just make it work, because two people with two false beliefs who not really aware of their false beliefs or their core belief, that's like butting heads to the max. And no matter what you do, you can't change that person until you become aware of your own stuff. And then you can make a new choice. So I had to do a lot of cleaning out myself and completion conversations. And really, at the time, I had to learn how to define what I want, because I was entering relationships not really knowing my needs, not knowing what I want, not knowing how to even bring that to a relationship. So I had a lot of work to do. And that's what I do with clients. Like, I help them define their needs and then, okay, well, how are you doing that in your life? And most of the time people aren't doing that. They say they want something, so being supportive, they want assurance, they want somebody who's driven, and they're not those things for themselves. And they have this expectation that that person should be that for them when they're not that for themselves or for the people in their lives.
So you had mentioned earlier in this last segment about, you know, ideas around gay relationships. And so in the world of LGBTQ+, I think the stereotype is lesbians can fall in love very easily and very often. Gay men don't find love at all or rarely, or basically you have to be hooking up with somebody for 10 years to finally, you know, get anything official. For trans humans, the stereotype is that you can love them and want them, but you can't be out about it. So with all of these stereotypes that don't always serve the community,
right,
have you, is there something you like to say to us, to them, that can make love mentally more attainable, more possible? Because I really do get this whole, this culture of being overly sexualized, only looking for the instant sexual gratification of what somebody is able to give to you without honoring the essence, the love, the heart of a human. And that being, as you say, a perpetual belief, and I mean one that can last for some people who are my age. I'm 36 currently, and so someone 36 that maybe knew for a fact they were gay or bi or something like that, it when they were, you know, 16 and 17, they have had 20 years of just hookups, 20 years of going to people's houses, people coming to theirs, getting the thing, thinking that it was more, finding out that it was not more, and then having 2 weeks of this utterly crushing internal episode, and then starting all over again the next month. And doing that for 20, I've met people who have told me they've never had a relationship and they're over 30. They've never had a relationship.
They I coached had... a guy, who was gay, 45. And when he came to me, he's 45 years old from Texas. And the longest relationship he had was 2 weeks. And that you can't really call that a relationship. He's like, you know, we go out, we hook up, a week later, they're gone. And so, you know, and I mean, piggyback of what you're saying, you know, I guess using him as an example, like, well, I would say right now he's currently in the longest relationship he's ever been in. They've been together now for almost his first relationship. They've been together almost 2 years.
Good for
and,
him.
Yeah. And he, I think I checked up on him last year, and the guy moved in with him. And so, I mean, he's doing really well. But what I can say is, one, within the LGBT plus community, what, you know, really that's a lot of things that really stop us is labels. And like we label ourselves like, well, I'm a this, I'm a that, like, you know, like for instance, like there's a, I'm not sure. I think the movie, the documentary name changed, but there's a documentary called The Adonis Factor. Have you heard of it?
No, I have not.
Yeah. So it's the Adonis Factor is about gay men and different. You have the muscle gay, you have the twink gay, you have the gay man who's like kind of straight acting. You have the like the twink, and they show the different categories of men and interview the different type of men. And none of the men socialize with each other. If you don't look muscle, I don't hang out with, you know, twinks. If you don't look this way, I don't hang out with you. You have to fit into this sort of box in order for me to like even be with you or and in dating or even to date you. And for me as a gay man, that was very frustrating because I would date all types, and I was like, well, I don't, and that, for me it was like, I don't really fit into those categories. So when I stopped, okay, well, I don't really fit into those things, that was, I really saw that how that was limiting me and my love life. Because I did thought I had a certain type of man, but I was like, well, I'm really attracted to just somebody who's capable and vulnerable of like being real. That's what I want. Somebody who just real and who is capable of showing themselves. And so, you know, learning to like look at why these labels serve me, because somehow these labels that we put on ourselves serve us. Like Eckhart Tolle talks about, like, if we can get rid of all the labels in ourselves saying I am this way, then you can really truly fully love fully and freely. So I really took that on to really every time I said, well, I don't date this person because of this. I don't date this person because of that. And I remember the last guy I dated, he was Middle Eastern. I remember having this like thought, there was something going on in the world where something was happening in the Middle East and they were like throwing gays off the building. And I was like, oh, I could never date somebody who's Middle Eastern. And I was just like, oh, I have, that's a belief that I have. And I was like, well, what if the person who I've meant to be dating is Middle Eastern? Like, and I was just like, wow, like I didn't really realize that I had this belief about a certain race. And I was like, okay, I'm going to give that up. And then literally a couple of days later, I met a guy who's Middle Eastern, and like, it was like the best relationship. So it's like having the willingness to look at when you say things like, well, I don't date this person because of this, I don't date this person because of that. Like, look at how that is serving you, because it's really limiting your ability to find the one, because 9 times out of 10, the love of your life does not look like the person you want that person to look like. And it's like so true. So we hold on to all these ideas of what this person looked like, instead of looking at, well, what kind of values does this person have? What do they bring to the table? What do I bring to the table? And do I bring those values to the table with my friends? Because a lot of the times we think that we bring, you know, a certain quality to the table, when actuality we don't, or we wait till we meet the one, and then I'm going to be loving, then I'm going to be this like amazing loving person, then I'm going to start cooking, and then I'm going to, like, no. In order to create a juicy love life, you do those things now for the people that are in your life. So when that person comes, they're stepping into what you are already creating. They're stepping into that goodness, that juiciness that you're already in it. You're not waiting for someone to give you permission to have a juicy love. Like, you're creating that with the people in your life right now, because the people in your life right now deserve that part of you. You know, and I think too that, you know, in the LGBTQ, just learning to just expand, like having the willingness to look at, you know, the beliefs, the needs. I think the biggest thing that I see is that a lot of gay men don't, and I see this all over, have no clue of what it is that they want and need in a relationship. A lot of people just like winging it. And the reality is, like, we all do need to learn what we need in a relationship to make us happy, and how to bring that to the table, and how do I cultivate that for myself and my life? Like, it's a skill that we need to learn, especially, you know, communication skills. Like, one of the biggest frustrating things that I found too in dating, like, a lot of men don't know how to communicate. A lot of men don't know how to plan. A lot of men don't know how to be creative and or listen to the needs of others. Like listening is a skill. Like, listening to the other person, what they're needing, catering to their love language, what they want, to in order to like cultivate that relationship. Cultivating a relationship and listening to the other person's need is a skill to have. Like, listening in general is a blessing, when you can really listen to and get and have a person be gotten for having a conversation with you. It's like, I hear you, and I'm here to be of service to you, and you are a service to me, and we have two people in a relationship that can really listen to each other and really get each other. I mean, it's just like gold when you can really have a skill to listen to the other person's needs and really get what they're saying, and not placing your own assumptions, your own, falsehood, or your own, or interject your own pain or your own negative beliefs onto them, and just really put that aside and like really listen to, well, what is this person really saying to me? What is your needs? Like, how can I serve you? Like, how can I be, your your catalyst in your life? Like, how can I just be the space for you to just show up powerfully? And that's a skill.
So it is definitely, definitely a skill. And for those that are listening and are interested in learning those skills or wanting to learn those skills from you based on everything that you share with us today, how is it possible that they can find you?
Okay. My website is jimmyallencoaching.com or on Instagram, Jimmy Allen. And then in the link in my Instagram is a link to like my website, how to, you know, schedule a session with me. You know, I do like a free first entry call. It's all located also on my podcast, Crazy Juicy Love. But it's a link tree in my Instagram that links to all my platforms.
That is great. And so if you're listening to this and you are somebody that does, you know, desire a juicy kind of love and you feel like you deserve it, but you feel like you may not have all of the skills or acumen to really bring into your life the thing that you see. Like, you see a love, you can feel that being a reality. Please reach out to Jimmy. He is here for you. He can make a difference for you now rather than later. Like, you don't have to wait for this. Reach out now. So for all of you all who have stayed on to just really see how delicious this conversation and the ability of what love is waiting for you is, thank you. Thank you for staying on. Please leave us a review. Let us know how you liked it. Please give us 5 stars. If you don't give us 5 stars, let us know what exactly we can do to get 5 stars on the next episode, because we are here to support you wherever you are. As always, there is a community on Facebook for entrepreneurs. Feel free to join, because we are family and we are here to support you. As always, I'm Ace LaVeau. Dreams and blessings.